Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and CaldwellLaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.
Welcome to the new year. This is 2025, and I know that dates the podcast by even saying that, but hey, we get a full year, so we can say that. But I'm here with my co-host, Katie Rubino, and we are talking pre-show about all the things that are happening in 2025 related to intellectual property. So, Katie, you ready to get into some crazy topics here?
I can't wait. Yeah, we have definitely a list of some exotic things we're going to talk about today. I don't know how else to
describe it. Yes. Well, listen, we just closed out Christmas and the holidays. And one thing that I think is happening is people either get IP really quickly or they don't see it for a very long time. And what I mean by that is we had this baker reach out to us over the holidays for Instant IP saying, hey, I got my baking business and she's got a, you know, she's a mom who's running a business with young kids and they're baking and it's going great. And I think she had like 70 orders on one Saturday, but all of a sudden this glam girl bakery, somebody starts stealing her stuff. And they start taking recipes and the look and naming the products. And she reached out to us. And I want to show people a quick pic here. Those who are watching on video can see this, but it's actually pretty slick. And, you know, she's got all these great logo. And she calls this the, how do you say that? Sopapilla cheesecake? Is that how you say that? I don't know.
I think so, maybe. Oh,
and then she's got the sourdough bread, but you'll see that on this amazing, beautiful packaging. She has this protected by Instant IP with a barcode. And she said that, quote, it gave her the confidence to focus on her customers and her baking goods as opposed to worrying about who's stealing her IP. So let's talk about that, Katie, first of all, because 50 years ago, it'd be very hard to run a business out of your house as a mom because digital didn't really exist. But certainly this very rural mom has this huge network now because of online space. So let's talk about that in 2025, first of all. Do you think that because of AI, digital, internet, people are really able to do side hustles a lot faster and easier, and therefore they are creating IP much sooner?
Oh, definitely. I think we've even seen a massive shift in the past 5 years since COVID too, because
that's good.
We had some digital tools and resources before COVID, but I'd say, you know, this sounds funny, but before COVID, it was very rare that I would even talk to a client over a video call. It was kind of old-fashioned doing just a conference call, right? And so with COVID, when we had to really rely on those tools, now that has become the standard practice where it's very rare if I don't do a video call now. So it's sort of this technological shift.
Wow.
And I think it's definitely, there's so many ways you can create these digital side hustles.
Yes.
That it's very common for this to be happening.
Oh yeah. I think you're right. I hear you basically saying that the bar has lowered in the sense of tech. You know, many, many years ago, I think I have it on my bookshelf, but there was a book called The World is Flat. And it was basically talking about, and this was like 20 years ago, but it's talking about how the digital age was going to create this flat effect so that there wasn't these massive, unbalances in the world of like, well, they have tech and they don't. And it kind of flattened the landscape so that everyone could play. And again, this was many years ago, but COVID, I totally see what you're saying. You're saying prior to COVID, I mean, it was almost offensive if you had a big client and you didn't hop on a plane to go see them. And now it's like, why go on a plane to go see a client if we can just pop on video? It's easier for everybody.
Right, right. I mean, even you look at different industries too. I mean, even in the medical field, right? Before COVID, you would never have a Zoom call with your doctor. That was unheard of. Now that some doctors will only see you over Zoom.
It's
kind of this big shift where we've used these tools to kind of create greater efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of shifted our societal norms too.
Yeah. And I forget what it was, but it was one of these inventors. And when the pandemic was happening and there was all kinds of fear of like, oh my gosh, our creativity is going to get jacked up because we were sitting in our homes. Somebody wrote an article about, hey, listen, one of the most biggest breakthroughs in technological time periods was during the Black Plague or something. One of these big pandemics where people almost had to go quiet and dark. And that's where innovation started happening. And you see that. You see like telehealth. Now all of a sudden you're diagnosing your own body with your phone and you're sending the pictures to the doctors. And it's almost like we got more scrappy.
Absolutely. I think too, it was necessity during COVID. There were shortages on a lot of different products, right? Because there was just such demand.
Yeah.
And so it forced innovation because we needed to get things out to the public quickly and create tools that could still allow us to work and have school and have somewhat of a normal life. And so it was sort of this necessity that drove a lot of the innovation too. And I'd say, you know, for us as a law firm doing IP work, COVID 2020, 2021, that was some of the busiest years for us because the phone was just ringing off the hook with people coming up with new businesses, new ideas, and really creating so many new products.
So maybe it's that, hey, listen, when you can't go to the beach and you can't go and do all these distractions, you actually become more innovative. I could totally see that. In fact, we hang in Strategic Coach, and I want to say that a few restaurant people rethought of, hey, okay, our restaurant can't open. We have space. We could create an essential business line with our countertop space and our kitchen areas. And I know that some of these people started inventing new products in the space rather than just letting it lie dormant. And that's really the difference between entrepreneurs who say, let's get busy creating and innovating, and other people who are like, well, you know, let's blame the government and we can't do anything. And it's really a mindset shift. And maybe that's even a great setup for our 2025 talk. So whether it's Glam Girl Bakery who says, look, I'm just going to keep rolling with my innovation and creation. And for her, Instant IP was that first fast layer. And hopefully when she scales and grows big time, she can trademark it with Caldwell and maybe even patent some of her unique processes. But we're also seeing, we were even chatting about and this is definitely newer to me. You're used to this, but this Kathy Vidal USPTO director, I was shocked to learn that they actually are switched out with different presidential administrations. Is that true?
That's right. Yeah. And so Kathy resigned, I think at the end of December or maybe mid-December.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so now there's an interim director, and then eventually once the new administration comes in, there'll be a new director appointed.
Interesting. Yeah, that, I did not know that. So I did see her make the announcement. I did see her talk about the Biden-Harris administration. But now that she's on her way out, what will change. You know, I see our friend Tom Wheelwright, who's in tax, says, hey, here's what tax means in 2025 based upon the new administration. But we're already starting to see that you can either be stricter, you can be looser, you can be, you know, more administrative, you can be more entrepreneurial. What do you think the new administration is going to bring in the terms of IP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say, I think we'll see probably a little bit of a looser administrative oversight on the patent system because, you know, under the Biden regime, some areas of technology became a little bit more difficult to patent because of new guidance set forth by the patent office.
And some of that would have been like artificial intelligence.
Yeah. It's, you know, especially too, because it's, this always happens around different kind of cutting edge technologies where it becomes very popular. So a lot of patent filings start to blow up. So then the patent office issues guidance saying, okay, this is obviously still patentable, but if you're going to patent it, you have to kind of follow these specific sort of rules around it.
So they're scrambling fast. I mean,
they, yes.
Yeah.
And I'd say too, you know, this is common. It happened too in the cell phone tech area boom in the 80s and 90s, where when the technology is first developed, you can get very broad sweeping scope of coverage on your patents. Mm. But as more and more incumbents enter the area and the tech becomes very heavily patented, then the scope kind of has to narrow in and hone in. And so, you know, we see this too with AI, where we were filing AI patents 6-7 years ago when it was, you know, ChatGPT wasn't around. So we were getting some massively huge, broad.
Yeah, you could patent like AI.
Right. Yeah.
Or something crazy. Yeah.
And now it's become a lot trickier. It's not impossible. It's still patentable, but you have to kind of write it in specific ways that the patent office wants it written. So it's just kind of more rules to follow. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if the new administration kind of loosens up some of those rules a bit.
That's cool. Even when I started with you and Instant IP and the blockchain, I mean, you know, that was a whole thing prior, you know, probably before AI, you saw it peak. Would I be right in saying that?
Oh, yeah. Blockchain, I'd say that was really huge for us. Probably in starting in maybe 2018. And that was a huge area because it was so new. Nobody knew. There was no systems running on a blockchain yet. Yeah. It was kind of very theoretical, but it was becoming very buzzworthy topic. And, you know, then you and I met and you were actually running on the blockchain.
Yeah.
Which was something really cool because you had your whole system in place and the infrastructure built to have transactions actually going on the blockchain.
Yeah. I only heard of blockchain like in 2020. And, you know, I kept hearing, I'm like, that's weird. I don't even get it. And then I just started diving in and Katie, what's funny is when I don't know something, I write a book about it. So this was that book that came out, Blockchain Life, that I wrote. I want to say it was probably 22. I'll have to look here. But maybe 21, something like that. But as I dove into this, 22, then I thought, oh my gosh, there's something here. But I didn't really know it, you know, and people probably can have that same situation where our listeners might be thinking, oh my gosh, there's something here. I feel like there's IP here. But is Katie, isn't that the reverse of most people? Most people have IP, they can't even see it. And then there's other people who know there's IP just within their grasp, but they, it's almost like haunting them. They have to like find it. What do you think?
Definitely. It's always a mix. There's some entrepreneurs who maybe they've been an entrepreneur before, or they've had experience with IP where they know what to look out for and what to recognize.
Yeah.
Right. And so for them, it's always just a question of when does it make sense to protect it? And then there's other entrepreneurs who maybe just don't realize they've created IP. They don't have experience with IP, or they just don't have the time to focus on protecting it. So it's always kind of a moving target of where they're at. But I'd say you're probably in this smaller group where you knew you had it, you knew you needed to protect it, and you wanted to protect it ahead of really doing anything publicly before you protected it.
Yeah, totally. And with blockchain and maybe even AI, there's this word utility, you know, and your crypto people like blockchain, and this was when NFTs were starting to peak. And I always saw NFTs as trendy and a fad, but I knew that a type of NFT, a smart contract, could be used in a significant way, but I just didn't know what it was yet. And I even spoke, because the USPTO started saying, well, we need to have all these panels. And maybe they probably did something similar with the AI, where they say, okay, lots of stuff's coming, we don't have a handle on it. And then they brought in like almost two types of people, practitioners and professionals, on those panels. And then they just had them speak and present, got a lot of data. Then they did a report to Congress, at least on our panel, in March of 24. So, you know, it's like the panel happened in 23, then they had to write the report. It took them a year. Then you start seeing what? You start seeing after that report, more like people are settling. And is that kind of happening with AI too? That's the cycle that happens.
That's right. And a lot of times what they'll do, the patent office, when they're thinking about changing some of the rules around patenting, they'll ask for public input on a topic. So I know in the fall last year, they were asking for input on AI patents, because they're trying to gauge, okay, kind of where is the technological field going here?
Interesting.
And how do we set guidance and rules that kind of are in alignment with where technology is going? And I think one place we saw that happening with AI patents was, and this happened really around the world, is can the AI itself be an inventor?
Yeah.
Open AI started popping up and everybody was like, well, if ChatGPT invents it, you know, can I list ChatGPT as the inventor? And in the US, they've said no. Most countries have said no. So I think that's an interesting area, because the patent office knew this, hey, this is going to become a real question. Yeah. That's going to crop up. So how do we want to, you know, give some guidance to inventors on that?
And that's an interesting one, because you know what happened to me in November, where AI wrote an article on my TEDx, didn't cite anything, but basically just scraped it. And there's an example of what if somebody took TEDx talks, AI scraped them all, and then they said, well, that's our invention. And then, is that kind of why you think the government started slowing down AI a little bit?
That, and I'd say too, you know, in order to get a patent on an idea and be an inventor, there has to be some new inventive step that you create, something that's different than anybody else. So if the AI is just regurgitating something that already exists, it's hard to really say there's anything inventive there.
Gotcha. But someday when AI can take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that, mix it together, and maybe then come up with a new thing. For example, Uber, you know, Uber maybe took GPS, social proof, ranking, payment, you know, and like combined technologies, I would imagine AI is probably not far from
right.
taking even like a Dan Sullivan triple play where it puts in this patent, this patent, this patent, and says, go AI, now go create a new thing.
Yeah, I know it's kind of scary to think about that, but it isn't that far off. And
yeah.
I mean, too, it'll be interesting this year to see where the patent office kind of goes with their directives on the AI patenting, because it is getting so big in very populated area.
Well, I even saw some people in the, for example, Andreessen Horowitz, one of the top VC firms with technology, one of their top people in AI and this innovative technology went off on his own. He's a very difficult name to pronounce. I can see his face. He's got a podcast. I literally stepped off the plane in London and there were big billboards of him. He's that popular. Anyway, Trump named him as whatever. I don't even know what you call that, like special assignment. You know, so Trump is actually reaching for entrepreneurs to be guides on certain topics. I think there's a crypto czar. I think there's a AI czar, you know, like, and so you're starting to see, even with the new administration, instead of fighting the technology, it's actually funneling the technology. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's a great point, because it's the technology is here to stay, right? And so we have to adopt to it and integrate it into our everyday life. So kind of getting input from people who are at the forefront of it makes sense, because they're already working day in and day out with the technology.
I love it. And this is that gentleman. Do you even know how to pronounce his name? Is it Sriram Krishnan? Something like that? Krishnan?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. But he, I don't even gonna put in here Trump. But chosen by Trump. See, I saw this recently. Trump taps him as a role in AI advisor. This happened December 23rd. So, I mean, that's crazy that Andreessen Horowitz, one of the top London, US global venture capitalist firms, Trump reaches in and says, look, I want him to be the guy to advise us on AI. That is a little bit nutty. I don't think we would have seen that under Kathy Vidal's leadership. I mean, we didn't. So,
yeah. I'd say, you know, Kathy, she was focused on a lot of other initiatives. So she did a lot of work on reforming kind of the patent office's pro bono program. So they did a lot of outreach. They actually reached out to our firm to give comments, because we had developed a pro bono program here to help individuals who were recently released from prison or in prison get patents. And so they kind of saw that, and we talked to them a lot about it, because they're really looking at ways to support entrepreneurs from all sorts of backgrounds and maybe who don't have access or the ability to afford a lawyer, right? How can we kind of create initiatives and programs to help?
Interesting.
Them? And so she was kind of focused on a lot of other programs. And she actually, I saw her speak last summer at the IAM conference in San Francisco. And she was also doing a lot of work to incentivize women to get into STEM fields and to kind of get more nails into the IP profession too, because right now I think only like 12% of all patent attorneys are female. So she was kind of doing a lot of other things, and I think that's probably why the AI piece wasn't as big of a focus, because she was working on some other programs there, which is cool.
That is cool. And you just mentioned IAM. We talk about a piece of that in our book. remind me, does that stand for intellectual asset management?
You know, actually, I don't know myself.
I think it does. Question.
Yeah, they IAM puts on a lot of great
you're right.
Programs. It is. Okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of publications too on different really cutting edge topics in the MP field.
Well, you go to all these conferences, which is awesome. I really like how in our book, though, we put a large section about this resource list, and even that alone, just forgetting the book, but we have the IP organizations, we have online license exchanges, research. I mean, I remember you going through this and being like, yeah, add them or take them away, or, you know, they're good. And, you know, so I learned a lot from this, but yeah, that's kind of what I even reference as well. So maybe to land the plane on this topic, we mentioned AI, but I also think there's this robotic thing. We were talking about some crazy stuff that's coming out. And I mean, there's a meme right now on Instagram. I know it's getting a lot of press, but it's like people are going to have more sex with robots more than humans in 2025. You know, and you have Elon Musk talking about birth rates declining. You have that robotic conversation going on. You throw in IP into that. I mean, there's some crazy stuff with this Optimus and robots. And I'm going to the Abundance Conference here in a few weeks. We're going to be speaking on publishing and instant IP and stuff like that. So what do you think about all that in robotics? We didn't even really talk about that, but this whole like Neuralink, or you having several robots around the house, like, is that going to be a thing?
I think it is. You know, there's a lot of ways robots can create efficiencies for companies. And, you know, I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg of it, because it's such new technology that how it will integrate is kind of a little bit unknown.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely a very big area that I'm watching closely, because I think there is a lot of innovation happening there.
Yeah. Well, and it's tough, because you're always going to have the, I think the term is called the Luddite view, that says basically, hey, you know, technology is going to escape our morality, and therefore let's just shut down all technology. And all you need to do is look at a phone and be like, look, a phone can be used to call in a hitman, or a phone can be used to call in a doctor. You know, technology is neutral. It's how we use it. So I do think there'll probably be immoral stuff, you know, very dark things that happen with robotics and tech. But on the flip side, there's probably going to be amazing, life-saving, and good for the, you know. So where does IP stand? I guess I've never asked you that before. Like, is IP morality agnostic? Or,
good question. Yeah, it usually is. So it's kind of, what a lot of people don't realize is when you file a patent at the patent office, it undergoes a review by the government. And if the technology is related to, let's say, national defense, security, a lot of times the government can place a hold on that tech. And they can also mandate a secrecy order on it, so that that patent will never publish. Or if it, or it can be placed under a government hold where the only potential party who would infringe the technology is the U.S. government. And so then it creates this question of if the U.S. government is only the only infringer of it, how do you sue the government? You can't sue the government directly. So This happens a lot with innovations for, you know, national defense, cybersecurity. And we've had different clients that have had these kind of secrecy orders put on their stuff. So there's a whole screening process that people aren't even aware of. But, you know, from just a morality standpoint, the patent office doesn't care. You can, you know, patent something that's immoral, but if it's something that relates to the health and welfare of populations, then the government can come in and kind of seize the technology, almost like with property where you can have eminent domain and the government seizes the property. There's similar sort of things for patents as well.
Well, I know what will get a lot of views is if we call this episode Intellectual Property and Sex with Robots. We might have to do that.
The SEO hits on that will be huge.
But, you know, I've never heard of that before. The whole government secrecy, suing the government, morality, immorality, defense. I mean, that's a whole fascinating topic.
It really is. And it's, you know, I mean, think about, too, the technology when the atomic bomb was created, right? That was super cutting edge tech. And so you don't also, you know, there's also this fear that if a patent on that technology, let's say, were to publish back then when it was created, we don't want other governments knowing this, right? So that's where, too, these secrecy orders get put on because it's so novel and there's so many lives that could be at risk of it if it gets into the hands of the wrong people, that the government is trying to, you know, protect everybody's best interests here with that.
Sounds like a movie needs to be on this topic. I mean, I think it could be. It could be really interesting. Wow. Well, Katie, it's always fun to chat with you. I know we're out of time today, but we do have a workshop. So whether people are hearing this right now and they're like, crud, I missed it. The first one is January 16th. Between you and me, I have one earlier with this young lady, Heather. That one's going to be focusing on idea creation. Ours is going to be focused on idea protection. But the fee for that workshop is so inexpensive. It's $99. You get over $2,000 worth of bonuses. I mean, it's one of these things where whatever stage people are at, whether they're just coming up on IP or there's a seasoned person, they're going to learn a ton. And the cool thing about this is it's not just spectator. We're going to have thinking tools. People are literally going to start identifying their IP. So it's extremely practical. It's a great way to kick off 2025. And I guess if people are hearing this and they're like, bummer, I missed it, they could always reach out and ask. And if we get enough demand, we'll do another one. But maybe we'll land the plane by you saying, what's one thing you're excited about? Like, why did you say yes to this workshop?
Yeah, I think I'm most excited for the workshop to really help shape everyone's thinking around IP because it's such a vital area for entrepreneurs. And a lot of times entrepreneurs don't know a lot about it or they think it's, you know, some super complicated area. So I'm most excited to kind of create a very digestible way of thinking about it and kind of helping entrepreneurs really unlock the value of what they're creating.
Oh, I like that. I like that phrase you use a lot, unlock the value. And then I've also heard a lot of our reviewers say you both make IP accessible.
Right.
Because it's this like, whoa, that's a deep topic. How do I get into it? And we make it accessible. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but the book's only been out for 6 or so weeks and we're already at, I forget, I think we were over 75 reviews already. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. So thanks everybody who's reading it, who's reviewing it. Yep, today we're at 76. So if people have not done that for the show or the book, Katie and I read every single one, and it really means a lot to us. It helps get the word out. So we are very passionate about getting this message out. And we appreciate you spreading the word, because we, you know, Katie, I put a big thing out. I said, could we protect 1 million ideas in 2025? That would be huge.
That would be awesome. I love that.
All right, folks. Thanks for being here today. And thanks, Katie, as well.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and caldwelllaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.